This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Shannon Dreher. And Shannon, that was pretty ugly last night. That was I know, as tough as that game was with a walk-off home run against the Yankees, this one was gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it was. It was just a strange game from the outset. You felt good about it when you saw that they were able to get to the knuckleballer early. Then there was a really quick restart as they were able to get to LeBlanc early. Nelson Cruz hitting absolutely insane home runs. Mariners putting up runs, which is a good thing. We haven't seen them put up that many runs very often in the last month and a half. But then the bullpen, you know, we've seen a collapse over the last week. They've got an ERA over 10 over the last 7 days, which is the worst in the American League. That's not what we had seen for the previous month. So really kind of a tough go for the guys out in the pen.
Oh, yeah. No, that was bad, really bad, because, you know, again, this is recoverable because you look at the way that the schedule is and the schedule remains favorable. They can make up a lot of ground. There's a big distance right now with the Angels. So this can be damaging, but it's not telling. But I guess the concern has to be Nick Vincent, who was great in the eighth inning last year, now gets the sixth inning role and he can't get it done. And Juan Nicasio, I'm sorry, he's just been bad. I mean, he had a good stretch, but, you know, his bad stretches have been worse than his good stretches.
Yeah, and, you know, Vincent, that was his first game back from the DL, so that's pretty high leverage, tough situation, tough ballpark to come into. You want him to be ready and to be making good pitches, and we didn't see that last night. You hope that was just a hiccup, but I think you need to look closer at what Nicasio is doing. And one of the things that, you know, kind of disturbed me about it, and you know, he did have a good stretch a few weeks ago of eight games where he didn't give anything up, looked like he was back on track. Then he had the thing with the knee. Then he came back from the DL. But when he comes in, and we've seen this throughout the season, we know he's a guy that has got good velocity, but so often he'll come into a situation and he'll be throwing 92. And it won't be until later in the inning where you'll see the higher velocity. And we saw that last night. He didn't get up. I don't think I saw a 95 until they were at least four batters in last night. And, you know, the slider he didn't feel good about, so he wasn't throwing it very much. And he's got to be able to throw that slider, and he's got to be able to give the velocity when he comes out. To me, that just says he's not ready to come into the ball game. So I think much like with what they did with Felix in the first inning, I think they need to take a look and see what is he doing to come into a game. How does he get? Is it an adrenaline thing? Is it a mechanical thing? What does he need to do? But to me, when you come in that many times and it looks like you're working your way into an inning, it's a preparation thing. And I would hope that that would be something that they could get sorted out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and because it was bad. I mean, because, again, these guys with $7.75 million tied up in Juan Nicasio and about, what, two and a quarter tied up with Nick Vincent, two and a quarter, two and a half. That's $10 million for guys that you're counting on. And right now they're slipping and not healthy.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Again, I think you've got to give Vincent a little bit more time, although, you know, he wasn't the same Vincent that we saw at the last year. But you've got to remember, I mean, his salary is based on what he has done in the last 2 years. It's an arbitration salary. He's performed very well for this team. It was a very good, you know, last-minute pickup by Jerry Dipoto a couple of years ago coming out of spring training. So you hope you can get him back to form, and it can be a situation where he is pitching in the sixth or in the seventh, whereas in past years he was pitching in the eighth. I mean, you went out to try and upgrade the eighth, and you're not seeing that right now. And, of course, you lost David Phelps. That would have helped with that situation, and we're still kind of figuring out what Alex Colomé is right now. So you would hope that somewhere in there you've got that guy, but it needs to get itself sorted out quickly.
Oh, no question. Now, what's the status of Gene Segura today?
We don't know. We're not going to know until we talk to Scott Servais a little bit later today. He said yesterday that you know, they were hopeful that Gene would be able to go today, that they thought he would swing a bat yesterday, and it's kind of be a matter of how he's feeling and pain tolerance. But I never saw Segura out on the field during batting practice. In fact, I never saw him at the stadium yesterday, so I'm not so certain that it's a good bet that we'll see him in the lineup today. But he has been on the antibiotics for over 48 hours now. You'd hope that they would start to kick in and we could see him back soon.
Mm-hmm. Because you can see that they need him, because they're going to need everything just to get through these next two games. Because, you know, the good thing about the four-game series that they had against Boston the last time is they didn't have to get Chris Sale, but now they get Rodriguez and Chris Sale, two really good pitchers.
They are, but, I mean, this team has shown the ability throughout the year, you know, even going back to game one of the season, to put up good at-bats, tough at-bats against some of the better starters in the league and get them out relatively early and get into a bullpen. So you hope that they have that ability. They haven't had seen Sale this year, so it'll be the first time they see him this year. But, you know, tough pitcher on the other side, but they have won a number of those ball games.
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, they will definitely need to get that going. And, of course, again, what you like about once you get through this, I mean, there's still a lot of breaks in the schedule. I was going through one little thing yesterday, and I was kind of trying to see all-star players on the teams. And, of course, I mean, you look at Boston, you look at Houston, and you look at the Yankees, and they're all at that 10 and 11 all-star, you know, guys that have been to the all-star game on their roster. And you look at the Mariners right now, which I think is very respectful, and I think shows some good things that Jerry DePoto has done. You know, they're up to 7 right now, and that does not include Edwin Diaz, and it does not include James Paxton. So if I don't know if you figure the Diaz is definitely going to make it, maybe borderline on Paxton. It would be nice if Mitch Haniger can make it, but from the paper standpoint, it does show that you know, the Mariners do have guys that you know, can kind of match up and keep them in at least the realm, maybe not with the same records as Boston, Yankees, and Houston, but it does show there's talent on this team.
Oh, I think that's without a question. And I think that, you know, there's some things that you need to focus on going forward. Obviously, this has been a rough road trip, but these are super teams. I mean, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Astros are super teams, and there's no two ways about it. The Astros in particular won the World Series last year. They have that playoff experience. The Yankees have got just a ridiculous bullpen and a ridiculous lineup. Yeah, you got Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. Torres is just a breakout star this year. Gregorius has got the power. We haven't even talked about Sanchez yet. It's a team that can do so much damage. And then you've got a lot of league leaders in Boston's team, and you know, a couple of guys that can be considered aces. So it's a little bit of a different level. There is an absolute top tier, and the Mariners are fighting to be right below that. And when you're in that situation, I think that you are playing for the length of the season, and you are looking to improve as the season goes on. So I think that the Mariner team that we see today, if they're going to make it to October, it's going to be a better team that you see in September. They will have made some additions. They will have had some performances, turnarounds, and some things improve on the team. It's going to be interesting to see how Robinson Cano factors into that and how he helps his team going forward into the playoffs, even though he cannot play in the playoffs. So I think it's just kind of two different things, and the Mariners should just kind of focus on what we saw at the beginning of the year. The first time they met Houston, they went 1-3 against them. The second time they split against them. And I think that you look for progress as the year goes on. And, you know, when you get past this tough part of the schedule, you put these games behind you, and the games that are going to be the most important are the ones that are in the division. You've still got 13 games remaining against Houston, and you've still got 11 games remaining against the Angels. Those are the most important games. These ones hurt, but they won't do the damage that those ones against the Angels in particular can do. So a lot of baseball left to be played.
By the way, I was looking at some stuff on the Angels, and how much does it remind you of last year? One of their starters is, you know, they're holding him out for a couple of days. So 4/5 of their starting rotation right now hurt. Does that remind you of last year's Mariners?
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's a reason for this, and I kind of called this early on, and the Angels starting pitching has been an absolute surprise in the first 2 months of the season. But you look at their opening day rotation, and they had 6 pitchers, none of which pitched more than 90 innings the previous year. They are all coming off injuries or different problems, and I don't know how you get that rotation to August. So the fact that they're having problems right now, to me, it is not a surprise in the least bit, and I think that this is something that you continue to watch with them. Now, the thing that scares me a little bit is I've also seen that Angels team do well when they've had pitchers go down. I think back a couple of years ago when they lost Garrett Richards in August, and I thought that would be the end of them, and he was on a big Cy Young campaign at that point, and they actually started winning at a better percentage then. So, you know, you don't take anything for granted, but that rotation that they built is, I think it's stunning that all of the pitchers in that rotation were coming off injury.
You know, it is amazing, and that's when you talk 15 players on the disabled list, that is scary. I mean, that's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, and the Mariners know exactly what that's like. They certainly have experience with that. And meanwhile, they've got probably the best player in baseball right now putting up historic numbers in Mike Trout, trying to do it all on his own. So, a bit of a tough go for the Angels right now, but you can't feel bad for them. You know what it's like, but you can't feel bad for them.
No, exactly. So now, what's going to be the key for the hitters trying to go through these next two pitchers for the Red Sox?
I hope that they just get back to that approach. And we saw it in a couple of the games in New York. They weren't rewarded for it, but they do have that ability to get tough with their at-bats and just to kind of dig in there and work the starting pitcher. So we'll see what happens there. Sale obviously is tough, and the Mariners got a good number of lefties in their lineup that actually hit the lefties pretty well. So, you know, it's kind of daunting when you look at what they have going up there. But the only thing I can say is that they've had experience. Again, it's not the first time they've faced pitchers of this caliber. They have found ways to win games. It'll help if Gene Segura is in there. You know, right now their lineup is kind of hurting from what it was a week ago. But, I think you just kind of look back and you try and take advantage of the ballpark a little bit. We saw Nelson Cruz certainly do that last night and go from there. The other thing is on the defensive side, you just can't make mistakes. You cannot give away outs to the other team. And on the pitching side, you know, you've got to ask for a little bit more from that bullpen.
No doubt. Shannon, we'll be listening tonight and tomorrow. Thank you for joining us.
All right, John.
Shannon Dreher joining us, and of course we'll come back and let's take the phone calls. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Thoughts on the Mariners. Choice between Earl Thomas, KJ Wright, or do you do both? Thoughts on what's coming up as far as the schedule for the Mariners. Anything you want to talk about, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up those phone lines. What's your thoughts on what the Mariners are doing on this road trip? And is it going to be damaging? Is it going to change anything? I don't think it's going to change much. I think it does show how the distance that this team is from the top three teams in the American League. The fact that, I know they did decent in the homestand against the Red Sox, but, you know, the bullpen beaten up. And it's so weird. And again, it gets your reaction to that at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The idea that, this team was supposed to be a team that was going to struggle for pitching and was probably going to have to be thought to be a team that would have to win a lot of high-scoring games. And now it's kind of the opposite, where it's like in the high-scoring games, the Mariners don't do as well. I mean, they lose this one. Certainly when they get more than five runs, and they've done such a good job with the pitching staff. But again, so much of it is against the bad teams in baseball. I mean, the teams just weren't any good. I mean, you know, they had great success against Cleveland. They caught Cleveland at the right time. Cleveland, in the end, is probably going to end up winning about 90 games. You look at the fact that they did well against the Angels, you know, did bad in the first series at home, but then get the sweep. That was probably the big savior. Had that happened the other way and the Mariners struggled against the Angels, I think there'd be a different feeling, because still there's a big enough gap between the Mariners and the Angels as far as in the standings, and the fact that the Angels are down 15 players and 4/5 of their starting staff right now, it's going to be hard for them to kind of rebound until they start getting healthy. But if they get healthy, then you have to kind of watch out for them. But then the Mariners, if they start continuing that pace that they have, 660 on winning games against the bad teams, the losing teams, then they still will come out fine and keep that distance and take all the drama out of the American League pennant race and the American League playoff race. And so, again, I ask you the one question. I want to get your response to it. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. If you could sign up right now for just getting into the playoffs and being the fifth seed, would you take it? Let's go to Gary. Hey, Gary, how are you?
Doing great, John. Yeah, I would take that. And I think what's happening right now is there's a shock and awe factor, even for seasoned veterans, when you go into those major league stadiums on the East Coast there. And, I mean, with all of the history and with all of their the good work that they're doing, it's a very intimidating situation. And as you saw with the Yankees, they got better as they were there, and that's what's going to happen with Boston, too. I wouldn't be surprised if they take the next two.
Yeah, but here's my concern. I mean, you would agree, is probably no argument that the Red Sox and Yankees are better. They have better. There's better personnel right there than the Mariners. Now, again, I went through purposely to look at, you know, the all-star qualities of these teams, and the Yankees, the Astros, and they're all 10 or 11. 10 or 11 guys that have been to the All-Star game. And you look at the Mariners, I mean, you know, they, which I think is respectful, they have 7, and then you can argue that they're not too far away. But the configurations of those two teams right now have a distance, and I think it's now coming through. I mean, you know, the Mariners were supposed to be, and once they get Cano back, you know, a team is going to hit, you know, 4.7 runs a game, but the Astros, the Yankees, and the Red Sox, they all score more than 5 runs a game. Oh, did we lose Gary? Let's go to Terrell in Seattle. Hey, Terrell.
Hey, John, my brother.
Good, how are you? Oh, well, get a little closer to the phone here. We can barely hear you.
Okay, I'm
there,
sorry.
That's perfect.
Hey,
you're good.
I
you're good.
Love your show, brother. And
thank
you. I listen to you every Saturday. What I want to say is I do agree with you about the All-Star Palace. I do feel like we're feeling the effects of Cano not being in the lineup. We need, like, that more veteran all-star presence to kind of pull us through some of these rests. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but...
Well, I know. I am 100% in agreement, and the numbers bear it out. And, again, it's funny because in my database here, I have this thing. I have Cano, and then I have C-A-N-O. Cano, which means there's no Cano in the lineup. All right, so when Cano was in the lineup, again, the pitching wasn't as good. They were giving up 4.5 runs a game, but that, which is still better than last year. That was an improvement. They were scoring 4.6 runs. So they're 23-17 with a 4.6 runs per game. Since he's been out, you know, they're 23-13, 10 games above 500, but they're scoring 4.19 runs a game and 4.03 runs given up. So for the season, or 4.41, which is about 0.3. I mean, you can make the argument, and I think it's valid, we ran it by Shannon Dreyer and some people this week, is if you take Cano out of the lineup, you're losing basically a half run a game.
Ugh.
So, again, what you said is 100% backed up, and that can be fixed when Cano comes back, but that's not going to be until August the 14th.
And that's not going to be for that long as well either.
Well, I mean, right now you can say that they have been through 36 of the 80 games, so they have 44 still left, but the schedule is not as bad. Again, the one thing that's really played well for this team is playing a lot of teams that they're better than.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the keys, you know, because now they've been able to, you know, get the victories, you know, stockpile enough wins, have enough of an edge that, you know, you can survive. You don't like, but you can survive a bad road trip like this.
Yeah. Do you think that Felix is just like, when he comes to these big games, do you feel like he's just turning back to that bully he once was? I mean, I just think he's been phenomenal, and I just felt like the rest of the bullpen been kind of waiting for him to shine, and now that he's shining against these big teams, the bullpen has got kind of, and the bullpen and the other starters are kind of like scared of the all-star appearance of Boston and New York. What do you think about that?
I don't think they're intimidated, but I think they're certainly affected. And I think that what you saw with Felix, remember, you know, when he concentrated, once he started to hit that bad spot and his earned run average was about 5.8, you know, he went to Mel Stottlemyre and said, hey, tell me what's going on here. And so they worked on a few things. He concentrated, and he got 2 out of 3 really good starts. But I think the one thing that you can see is that in Yankee Stadium, he just shines. I mean, he pitches. I mean, that concentration automatically comes in. And part of the thing that Mel wanted him to do was prepare a little bit better, because so much of his past has been, it's like he's just so good, you can get away with not having to prepare because your stuff was so good. Now his fastball is down to 89 miles an hour, and so he has to readjust. And when the focus is there, and the focus certainly is there against a team like the Yankees, it's good.
You're completely right, brother.
Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Hey, thank you, John, brother.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Linwood. Hey, John.
Hey, John, and thanks for another Saturday edition, man.
Well, thank
and,
you.
And just continuing on with the Mariners theme, you know, and just listening from your earlier on the podcast earlier, you know, I really do think DePoto and Service is deserving of a contract extension. That's a no-brainer. I'm really glad that they didn't break down the team like the average fans wanted them to do. And then I think we know what's going on with them this year. Like, they'll probably end up being the fourth best team and making the playoffs, but I still think that there's a chance that they can contend and then within the division to go for the Astros, because they're really not that far away, and they can make, they just need to make a couple moves to like get over these teams that they can beat. They need, and two things need to happen. They need to extend the rotation, like going out for another pitcher like a Reynaldo Lopez or a Colin McHugh, like I've been clamoring for. And also, I think that they need to, you know, just stay pat with, you know, what they're doing. Just like not go too crazy and try to give up too much for these guys. But, you know, I think that they're going to be fine. I do think they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah. And, well, that's the thing. It's like, but the one thing that I would think would be put the caution sign is, and you don't want to concede anything, but I think you have to be realistic. And I think that it's been realistic from what we've seen this year. I mean, the Astros are 4-2 against this team, and you can see that the Yankees, got the sweep, and now the Red Sox have a chance to maybe get a sweep or at least get 2 out of 3 here. Is that they're just not as good as them, and it's like you have to realize that. And again, how much do you really want to give up? Because again, you're giving up your future, and you want the future to still stay. Because again, what this city does not want is to break this team up.
Yeah,
I know a lot
exactly.
of people
I
talked
don't want
about
them to break it up either, John.
Because again, it's like now you're going 5 years without playoffs, knowing that. And you look at baseball right now. Have you seen the attendance figures?
Yes, I have, John.
19 out of 30 teams right now are with bad attendance. They're losing more, and there's very few teams that have even increased. And so what's happened now? And think about it's not going to. You won't notice it here. But in the rest of the league, in the rest of the American League, I mean, if it goes the way it looks like it's going to go and the Mariners get the last seed and get into playoffs, there's no drama. I mean, there's less drama right now. I mean, it's almost like you hear crickets when you start to look outside of the six teams with winning records, and you may be able to get crickets at the Oakland game.
Another thing, John, with this, you know, this is a win now team, John. This roster was built for like a World Series contender, and, you know, getting to the playoffs, that'll be good to break the drought. But let's not forget that this team was built to contend, and they are really missing Robinson Cano. And, you know, I think like next season when he's able to have a full season and play in the playoffs, you know, I think that's really kind of, you know, what we're looking forward to. But I will be excited for the playoffs and see how they do and if they make any moves to improve and go after the Astros, because they still got a lot of games left against those guys and
sure
in the division, John.
Hey.
Have a great weekend. Great to listen to you, as always.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And who do we have on the line, Matt? Let's go to William. Hey, William, how are you?
Sir, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Oh, wonderful. To answer your question real quick about the Mariners, will I take the one-game playoff? Absolutely not. I went through and through the 95 season, and I honestly feel, in the 2001 season, obviously, I honestly feel that my hopes have been put on hold since then. And I thought at that time they were turning the corner as a franchise. And I think one of the biggest travesties in baseball history is that Felix Hernandez, in his prime, never got to toe the rubber in a playoff game. So, no, I'm not satisfied with that whatsoever. One-game playoffs. To me, stink. I think it's a stupid idea. I've always hated that idea. So that's where I stand on that. As far as the Earl Thomas and KJ Wright thing, I don't know why we haven't done something with Earl Thomas yet. I mean, I guess I understand why. I know why, but I mean, I'm ready to move on. You know, we've already moved on from Richard. We've moved on from several of the other guys. I love Earl Thomas. I always will. And KJ Wright, to me, is the better buy long term.
Yeah, see, I think that's where the team's going to think. And what's happened is that Earl's put himself in that bad position because just like you said, I mean, you've underseen the change that's going on right here, and you'd love to have Earl Thomas. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame possible safety. He's that good. But now you start to think about the third contracts, and now you're getting guys that are going to be a little bit older, and can they sustain the level? Because, you know, what you don't want to have is 2-3 years down the line that, you know, he's making this amount of money, and then you have to kind of let him go, and you hadn't had a chance. Then you're going to, you know, suffer from the fact that you didn't get a chance to get Delano Hill or Tedrick Thompson on the field. In the case of KJ, when there's no, you know, he's their second best linebacker. He's a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. And I think that, you know, a linebacker might be able to last a little bit longer than a safety who hits as hard as Earl. And so that's why, first, I mean, there's no negotiation that can go on. I mean, Earl's the better player. Earl should get more money. But the problem is with his holdout, that prevents the team from really doing anything with him because, you know, the one thing that's there is that, you know, you don't know. You just don't know if he really wants to be here or not. And what you also know is that he's not here. I mean, he didn't attend the offseason program and he's saying he's going to miss training camp. Well, that's puts it in a tough spot. Until you can spend about a month with him and gauge things, you can't talk contracts. So I think that you concentrate. You got $60 million of cap room. I think you try to get something done with KJ Wright. Price is going to be in the $10 million range. That's not bad. I think you do it. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
Everything going good. How about for you?
Yeah, same, man. I haven't been on for a while, so I'm going to put a glide in my stride and a dip in my yippee, like George Clinton would say, by first giving a shout-out to Buckley's and Queen Anne for hosting the 10th Sonics 1979 championship celebration. You know, Tim Buckley has been a longtime Sports Bar Network supporter, which is why I pounded the airwaves that Key Arena was necessary to maintain a vibrant Seattle Center, and now Buckley's and Queen Anne is in position to be the absolute best place to go when hockey comes to Seattle. I even think he mentioned changing his floor to a rink or something like that. And while I'm giving shout-outs to the Sports Bar Network, John Clayton, now that summer's here, we've got Commando Dave's Croquet Corner at Whoa. Green Lake right across the street from Jack's Alehouse. So the croquet players out there, X marks the spot at CommandoDave.com. And let me tell you, John Clayton, I would rather play 162 games of croquet instead of sweating out the next 86. But let me say this to Mariner fans. This is the type of season that the state legalized weed for. Let me move quickly to the NFL off the field stuff, John Clayton. I heard you tell JB and Renton you thought Eric Reed was caught up in the NFL protest net. Did you double-check your spreadsheet after talking with Jimmy last week, and have you changed your mind about Kenny Vaccaro as well?
Think about Kenny Vaccaro's what?
As well as being caught up, as you mentioned, you think Eric Reed is caught up in the NFL protest net. Do you think Kenny Vaccaro is as well? After talking with Jimmy last week?
I don't. Maybe not as much. I think, I mean, to a minor degree, but I think in the case of Eric, and that's why I think it's unfair of Eric. I mean, not of what he's done, but I think it's unfair of the league because he's a good player.
Right.
Very good player. And he should be on a team. And it's like, listen, we know that the safety market is bad. I mean, you know, Trey Boston, I know Trey Boston was on Sirius yesterday, and what Trey was saying is that he only had two visits. He went to Indianapolis, and nope, the GM and the coach didn't even come see him. He was just sitting there. They sent him home, and then he got wined and dined in Arizona, but they didn't offer him much money. So the safety market's bad, but the problem with Eric Reed is I don't know if he's had many visits.
Well, let me just say this as far as safety go. When you mentioned earlier Earl Thomas or KJ Wright, of course I want them both, but if I have to choose, I'm going with Earl Thomas since DBs have to stick together. But that aside, John Clayton, Earl Thomas is and has always been, since he got here, the Reggie Jackson of the Seahawks defense because he is the straw that stirs the drink. coming up here just better not be a plastic straw. Let me ask you this, John Clayton. Reggie Bush just couldn't be the first player to get injured on the sidelines, going out of bounds at 50 miles an hour and skating into something or someone on the ridiculous concrete surface that starts right behind the benches. But is he the first to sue the league?
I think he's among them. I mean, there's probably others because there's been so many lawsuits through the years, but he's among the first. But honestly, I still remember that game, and I remember how bad it was. It was really bad. And so that's where the conditions, you know, the league has to have somebody there to approve. And the city, of course, I mean, it's a NFL-sponsored thing. And that's why, you know, the Rams were the losers in this because, again, it was not safe. And you know, that's one of the things that has to be there. And so I don't begrudge Reggie, and I actually credit him for having the smarts of being able to sue and being able to win because that was a bad injury he suffered.
Well, you know, and I've always thought when I watch guys skating through there that whole entire surface should just be field turf. Any chance the league rethinks that and makes it all turf down there, John Clayton?
No, I don't think. Well, what do you do in the stadiums that have grass?
Put grass on there.
Yeah, so, no, I think the big thing is just watch because I still remember. I mean, it was before Reggie Bush got hurt, it was an item. It was something that everybody was talking about. It's like, look how bad that looks around there. And sure enough, I mean, you can't stop yourself when your momentum is taking you out of bounds and he goes out and then, boom, hurts his knee. And so I know I was on a St. Louis station. They were asking me before the verdict came in. He's like, well, do you think mm-hmm. that the city's going to be losers on this? Well, they've already lost a franchise, so they've already lost. But it's like, no, it's like I think it's going to be the team or the league. And it turned out it was the team.
Huh. And lastly, John Clayton, as a longtime journalist, I'm interested to find out from you, what does it say about the state of journalism in this country if Pulitzer Prize finalists and 25-year veteran of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Rogers, can be fired for making fun of the former owner of the New Jersey Generals?
Well, it just shows you how sensitive everything is and how everybody's looking. And I think it's part of just the instant reaction that's there, not necessarily blaming the Internet, but the reality is that you make one thing that's controversial and you're gone. It's unfair. Because, I mean, he's had a great career. And to just, you know, end up, you know, doing something that was, you know, politically not necessary. And again, if you're a cartoonist, I mean, aren't you supposed to be making pointed type of things? But no, I think it's sad.
That's what you do.
Yeah, it's sad exactly. And it's wrong. But again, it's like, you know, I think it has to judge what is done. Now, when you do like a Roseanne, yeah, you deserve to be fired. If you do if you do any kind of a bad thing to a woman, you deserve to be fired. But again, just a political commentary like that should not get you fired.
Otherwise, I've been fired a long time ago. Always good being on with you, John Clayton. My best of Mrs. Clayton. Talk
okay.
to you next week, buddy.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John. I'm out on mile 11 of a 20-mile walk, so I listen to you all the time.
Well, I appreciate that.
My question is that man down in Oregon, the pitcher for the Oregon State, he didn't get drafted by any team. Does he deserve a chance to play professional baseball, or is his crime such a scarlet letter that he's blacklisted forever?
Well, you hate to see anybody blacklisted because you should get second chances. But I think naturally at this time there's a sensitivity to what he did, and because of that I think it's going to be, you know, at least short-term hard for him to do it. But he should get a chance at some point because, you know, that's because he's talented. I don't know what type of person he is. Obviously, I don't have any knowledge of what he is now compared to what he did, but I think he should get a chance. But you can also understand that nobody should be, you know, rushing to get him. You just kind of wait it out a little bit, and then maybe he has to wait a year, maybe he has to wait 2 years, maybe he just has to wait a couple weeks. But I would have to think enough talent is there that somebody's going to sign him.
Does the fact that the MLB, you know, gives suspensions to, you know, the pitcher just suspended for spousal abuse? What kind of policy does Major League Baseball have against?
Well, the problem is until
he's a sex offender. So, what kind of policy does MLB have toward that?
probably not a very good one, because, I mean, if you have to kind of register as that, I think that's going to be a problem. But, you know, the problem he faces is that he's not in the union until he signs with the team. All sports.
Well, I mean, to me, it's still kind of amazing that Oregon State even took him. I mean, I guess it's that just a question of if talent trumped is the charges against him, or, you know, I kind of find it amazing that he even found a college to go to.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true, because if it's all there as far as the information, it makes it a tough judgment to be able to take him, because, again, it's like, you know, if you have a sex offense like he's had, it is hard. But, again, I still kind of go with you. You still need that second chance. I mean, you shouldn't be,
well,
you know, it's like he has a skill. He has an ability. He should be able to display it and be able to earn money doing it. I mean, you know, did he pay enough of a price? Maybe not. But it's something that I think that he does deserve a second chance.
Well, John, I'll keep walking for you. Like I said, I listen every week.
I appreciate
that. Love your show.
Thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show and producing the show. Taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Richard. Richard, how are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks for the show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, I might ruffle some feathers here, but I'm going to address the elephant in the room regarding Earl Thomas, Mike Bennett, and Rich Sherman. You know, these guys, as well as they can play football, and there's no denying that, you know, they're not activists, and if they are, then they need to quit and be that, and they're not politicians, and if they are, they need to quit and be them. I don't think there's any place for it in sports, and I'm glad that they're gone. I think that they only created a cancer within the team because of their personal beliefs and their, you know, political stance, but that's
yeah. But one point to bring up, but I mean, unless I'm missing something, I don't know of Earl Thomas being involved in anything like that. I mean, he stood for the national anthem. He's not really taken really any. I mean, he'll say what's on his mind. And
right.
You may not like what he says. I mean, you may not like that he went over and, you know, tried to tell the Dallas Cowboys to come get him. You may not like that he said he's going to hold out. But to my knowledge, I mean, is there any political thing that he's done? It's a different venue. I mean, in Richard Sherman, certainly, I mean, he'll speak out on things. You know, Doug Baldwin steps out on things, and he's been, you know, nominated for the Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award. Am I missing something on Earl?
No, I think you're right there, John. I think I was thinking of some other things that kind of grouped him in with just the fact that, you know, there's just certain personal tones and things that, you know, like where I work, that wouldn't apply there, and I wouldn't bring them to work with me. But anyway, I like I said, they're all great players. They, you know, best at what they do. It's unfortunate that, you know, that they can't divide the two and you know, I don't know. It just in my opinion,
yeah.
But and I think you said something about Roseanne and agreeing that, you know, she should have been fired for what she said regarding, you know, another woman or mm-hmm. another individual. And I was thinking about that and thinking, well, what about this lady who has the cable show that you know, made the reference to Donald Trump's daughter and what she called her and why she didn't lose her job.
Yeah, I mean, because I think it came close, because that was a bad one. But that's I think, one of the scary parts of society now, because you say one thing and all of a sudden your career goes up and boom. Now, it depends. I think you have to grade how bad it is. And I guess there's been other things with Roseanne, but I mean, do you put them all together? But it's like, you know, I think, you know, you've got to be more cautious. And that's, I do live radio. And they got to do television. It's like, okay, I've got to watch what I say, and so you have to be on guard. So to make it personal and do things like that, it's wrong. But that's just society right now. It's like if you, and again, sometimes you don't deserve that extra chance, because if you keep doing it, you doesn't deserve it. But again, I think people right now are so quick to judge. Hey, thank you so much. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor, how you doing?
I'm doing great, John. Another great show, bud.
Ah, thank you.
Hey, any series this coming up week?
Not this week, but I got four days coming up in the first week of July.
Okay, good deal. And then quick quick one about Denver. John, do you believe that the upgrade with their offensive line will give them more of a chance at finishing in the top of the AFC?
I'm still concerned because I don't know if it's still it's better, but I don't know if it's going to be that much better. And that's the concern that I have. I mean, I still wasn't sold on the idea of getting rid of C.J. Anderson. Still think the running game is so important that you don't know it's there. And I think there's going to be a little bit of a drop-off in the defense. Certainly the quarterback position is in better shape. Case Keenum comes there having his best season. I think he's going to help out a lot. And I think the one thing that is still in question is how good is the head coach?
John, would you pay – I know getting, losing C.J. was rough, but would you have kept him at that price he's getting for – $4.5 million a year?
Four and a half's cheap. That's not bottom basement, but yeah, I wouldn't mind paying him $4.5 million. I mean, you know, top running back. I mean, he's getting half of the salary, a little less than half of the salary of Devontae Freeman. That's, you know, it's four and a half is a very low price. That's not bad. And he was 1,000 yard back. I mean, he was only 9,000 yard backs in the league and he was one of them.
Yeah. No, I thought four was a little bit higher than what the average league is, I guess, or paper league. And then one last thing. You think Denver will sign a veteran quarterback? Because if Case goes out, then that's...
Yeah, no, I think they're going to probably stay with Paxton, but I think they need to consider something because I don't know if I have any faith right now in Paxton Lynch as being the backup quarterback. So they probably really should consider doing something. You know, I don't know if it's going to be taking, you know, Derek Anderson or something like that. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back on Monday at 10 and next week at 9. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.